Okay, the recorder's on. This is World Affairs Monthly, and I have on the line today Mrs. Carlene Pettit, and she is a commercial airline pilot and has been a pilot for over 40 years. She's 61 years old, born in 1962. She has a PhD from Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Daytona Beach, Florida, her dissertation, very interesting, was on aviation safety. And she's made that dissertation into a book, so you can buy it if you're interested. It's titled "Normalization of Deviance: a threat of aviation safety." And of course, Carlene is found on the net as usual. People all over the world could find her, carlenepettit.com, and I'll just spell it for everybody: K-A-R-L-E-N-E. P as in Paul, ETITT.com. Carlene, it's great to talk to you. And, I didn't really want to say too much at the outset about what happened to you because I want you to tell the story, but it seems basically like you butted heads with the senior management of Delta Airlines. And of course, that's good. But I wanted to raise two issues. It seems to me there are two issues, like I said, at play. Number one, going up against power is always troublesome, right? It's always, and if you're a man, it may be a little bit less difficult, but if you're a woman, it's definitely very difficult. And number two, when you're working for an airline or for a hospital or whatever, for a government, you got this problem of employment, terms of employment. So I think, basically, for example, an airline pilot, has to be healthy, has to be of sound mind, et cetera, because it's a dangerous job, et cetera. And I just want to add one more thing. I come from an aviation family, in fact. My father worked for NASA, and he was in the U.S. Air Force. He wasn't a pilot, but, I met many pilots in my day in the Air Force. And I have two sons. One is a helicopter, younger one is a helicopter pilot, age 20, earning about $75,000, $80,000 a year in New York City, flying Bell 407 aircraft over New York City. And the other one is 23. He's a scientist, engineer, and a patent. He has patents, and he's an inventor, and he's an aeronautical engineer. So I just have some knowledge of aviation, but not very much. So anyway, it's great to have you on the line. And I wanted to, start with this idea that, maybe you're a good candidate to head up the FAA. I'm kind of joking around, but maybe you are. Okay.
I've actually heard that before, but I'm really not a good candidate. Oh. I would have the ability to do it, but here's the problem.
Yeah.
The airlines, I shouldn't say that. There's too much coercion. Basically, I personally believe Delta Airlines owns the FAA. They control a very, very large segment of them, and they do what they want. Only because if you think about what happened to me, I presented a safety report to senior executive Steve Dixon. I didn't whistleblow. I didn't rat anybody out. I just observed 8 years of really bad behavior. And that was what prompted me to go back to school to get my PhD, because I saw the training. I was watching the training. I was watching falsification of training records.
Wow.
Managers told new hires, fatigue is the other F word. It'd be better to call it drunk. We had some near catastrophic accident. We're talking seconds that one flight's heading into the ground at 2,000 foot per minute and pulls out 35 seconds. Close. And so I thought, this is interesting. And so my research really was on safety culture, training, level of understanding, and then aviation passion impacted manual flight and operational performance. And I based this on what I observed at Delta. And what I learned was safety culture, a negative safety culture, is highly impacting operational performance. And so when I was going through this process, trying to understand, because Delta is my eighth airline, I was a 747 instructor over at Northwest Airlines, and I have a passion for training and safety. And when we came over, I thought, whoa, this is a huge cultural difference. Mm-hmm. So I go back to school, and during that process, I'm at an aviation safety conference, and Richard Anderson, who was the CEO at Delta at the time, originally at Northwest, He stepped back, went to United Healthcare. They battled out the, you know, the merger, and then he came back in and took over Delta. Mm. And so when he was still in and under the rule or in charge of the airline, I went to a conference, and he stated, every employee at my airline has the unfettered responsibility to bring anything forward they see unsafe.
Yeah.
And he wagged his finger, the unfettered. And they could shut the airline down if they want.
Wow.
And so I thought about it, okay, I got to put a report together and bring what I know to this company before we have that accident.
I see.
And I was warned, don't do it. And I was told I was going to get this Section 15, which I didn't know what that was. But I was naive because I did not think that any employee bringing a report to the company would help them, would elicit such a responsive attack as such as they did to me.
I see.
And for all your listeners, what transpired is they paid a doctor, long story short, they paid a doctor $74,000 to call me bipolar.
I'm sorry I'm laughing, but that's amazing.
Well, I was only, you can laugh because I was only bipolar for 3 weeks and then the mail kind of killed me. How's she old? No. Yeah, so it is absolutely amazing. And the most amazing thing is, you know, after 7-year battle and we ended up in a 9-day trial, the doctor actually got on the stand. We didn't even depose him because we never fathomed they would bring this guy, who was just a bought and paid for hack, into trial, and they did. And what he said is basically, I was bipolar because I accomplished too much.
Oh yeah,
no,
you're a busy lady. You're a busy lady.
Yeah, I was too successful. No woman could possibly have children, be married, help her husband, write books, fly airplanes, and go to school.
Okay.
So I had to have a mental health disorder because I was too successful.
That sounds like mania to me.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. And the funny thing is, I was reading his transcripts, and throughout he said, she had to be exhausted. She had to be. Of course I was exhausted.
Yeah.
I think I would have rather been manic and then I wouldn't have been exhausted.
Yeah.
You know, so, So what they did is they were just looking for a permanently disqualifying solution. And I had a law firm during this battle. The union was part of this. They kind of, Delta kind of owns ALPA also. They put their people into they put their people into ALPA, and they control them.
Okay.
And so I knew ALPA wasn't supporting me, and I kept thinking, this has got to be wrong. They can't do this to me. Send me to psychiatric evaluation because I gave a safety report. And every attorney I spoke to said, oh, no, you got to wait until they fire you. And then one attorney said, they're going to do one of two things. They're either going to keep you out as long as they can, give you minimal training so they can fail you in a check ride, or they're going to buy a doctor that says you're crazy and you'll never work again.
I see.
And I thought, I can't do anything about them buying a doctor.
Yeah.
But that training program thing could. So while I was out, I bid the 777. So they had to give me a whole new program when I came back, which they did.
Really?
Okay. But they did. The instructor later had told the captain that they had given him the word to down me. But I didn't give him any reason. And he turned out to be a good guy and didn't do it. So.
Yeah. Now, Carlene, a quick question. Do you think that they were aware of how outrageous this is when they were doing it? Or they think they were drunk with power? I mean,
they're drunk with power.
Yeah, okay.
They're drunk with power and a really high ego.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is, we were, how often do you have a lawsuit ever where the CEO is involved? But we found a document that the CEO had requested a meeting to discuss me with the guy who did it and one of their attorneys the day after I met with I call her the pseudo HR lady because she really wasn't HR safety. She was manager of the past travel complaint department who had never interviewed a pilot in 20 years.
Uh-huh.
So we'll put that over here. But so they had meetings and it was funny because they didn't give us all the discovery in the trial. So you asked for all the documents. They gave us very little, but because they were playing games and didn't do what you call bait stamp and document each one, they just gave us 16,000 pages. My attorney started at the back And we found one, and we found this memo that the CEO is requesting a meeting for 30 minutes. And we have this oral argument with the judge because they're arguing, you can't depose that bastion. By the way, your listeners can go watch the testimony on YouTube. Yeah, his is, you can Google Ed Bastian. I don't know what accountable executive means. And I also put a little meme out there on my YouTube channel with Ed Bastian safety or something. It's pretty funny. Yeah. But yeah, but they're arguing. They said, Your Honor, we can't be blindsided by this memo. And my attorney says, Sir, or Your Honor, I don't see how we could possibly blindside them by something they gave us. And then, Your Honor, he's responsible. 80,000 people. He cannot possibly, you know, be take his time to go do this. And the judge says, Well, sir, I'd like to know if he's so busy with 80,000 employees, why he's spending 30 minutes on one of them. And so that's why we got to depose him. So it went very high up. I had been later told that Jim Graham, the person who did this, Steve Dixon, was just one position above him, approved it. And he still got into the FA, which is amazing. But Jim Graham is now the CEO of Endeavor. But Jim Graham, I had been told that he hated three things more than anything else. He hates Northwest pilots, which I was. He hates female pilots, which I am. And he can't stand anyone telling him what to do. It was, I think it turned into the battle of the ego. And they've done this before. Their attorney actually told me that they engaged a war of attrition on me, meaning they were going to run my attorney bills up so high that typically in this law, if it's broken, you only get about 90% because you only get reasonable attorney fees. Well, there's a threshold where that 90% won't even cover what the judge awards you under compensatory. That's what they were doing. They were running it out. And so ego, power, it made no sense. None of it. It still doesn't.
Well, you know, ladies are going to sometimes get under the skin, right, of powerful men. You know, if ladies are really pretty sharp like you are, they're probably going to piss these guys off, and I don't know, it becomes personal, probably, no?
It does. My husband says it all started when we were allowed to vote or go to college or something like that. I don't know.
Well, I remember interviewing, just to give you a good laugh, I remember it was about 20 years ago in the early days of World Affairs Monthly, I had a lady on the phone. I think she was, I can't remember now, she was a professor, it doesn't really matter, but she told me that she was the first woman, to go to Harvard Business School. And this was probably in the early 60s. And, you know, we talked about that. And, I can't remember what she was doing and what I was talking about, but she was a very nice woman. And she was pretty cynical. You know, she just simply said, hey, these men, some of them could compete with me, but not all of them. I thought that was pretty funny. I thought it was really funny. So, yeah, I mean, ladies are going to be there, and it's kind of irritating, but they will be there.
Well, they are going. It is very irritating that we're going to be in there, especially when we're telling you what to do. But, you know, we have life skills when we're manic that we learn how to manage a household,
kind of like Mandy.
You know, we have to multitask. We have to be able to talk to ATC and do what we're doing while the kids are talking to us in the back. You know,
there's a lot of
female life skills of being a mother that poured into the flight deck. But so my whole training, I mean, I've gone to 8 airlines and I've been, you know, thousands of hours of instructing the writing training programs. And I'm just really dumbfounded how it can go the wrong direction. this thing with the FAA, here's the problem. Steve Dixon approved of what was going on. He was actually what we got in discovery. We learned that they were planning this 4 months before they had me meet with the lady who enacted it. So they had premeditated it, and we have multiple emails stating that. Now, so he was over Jim Graham and he approved it. How could he possibly, this is a violation of federal law that they did this. How could he possibly somebody who violated federal law become the FAA administrator.
Right, right.
You know?
Well,
and
yeah.
That's perplexing.
That's a very good question, and I was thinking of asking you that question. You beat me to it. Give it a try. Give me an answer.
Well, the answer is because the statute that I filed my claim under, they have it, it's called the Air 21. It's the whistleblower law for aviation. And the reason that was enacted because the Federalists decided that aviation safety can't be in the hands of an arbitrator. And this Railway Labor Act, which is a 1930s act, is so archaic. I mean, it's the worst thing in the world to safety. Okay, so everything has to go into a grievance process. Well, the grievance process is judged by a businessman. He gets paid by the company, he gets paid by the union, and whoever wants him more gets it. And sometimes he has to go this way, and sometimes he has to go the other way. Mm-hmm. And my attorney shares a really interesting story that he had three cases many years ago, and the first case he won, and the second case he won, and it was the same arbitrator. And the third case, this was a lot, it was the best case out of all of them. He should not allow this. The pilot was like golden. And the arbitrator came out and put his arm around him and said, son, you do know you're going to lose today. Mm-hmm. He said, you can't possibly win three times in a row. And so that was his statement. So they created this law called Air 21. But the law really protects the airline. And it does it mm-hmm. for many multiple reasons. Number one, it's the shortest statute of limitations ever, only 90 days. Mm-hmm. If something happens to a pilot, they'll go down to the union contract and hope that will help them. So they typically miss the 90-day statute. Number two, you can't name the individuals. You just name the airline. So nobody's held accountable in it. Mm-hmm. The airline didn't do the bad. The people did.
Yeah.
But they're not named. And then there's also only compensatory damages. And like I said, reasonable attorney fees, which is typically 90%, which means no attorney will take it on contingency because they can't. They're only going to get, you know, maybe 90%.
Yeah.
And then typically it's $50,000 for compensatory. So you leave these employees out in limbo. But it's that accountability is the reason he was able to get there. Now, mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you, he actually retired early, within 2 days of Delta losing their appeal. Mm-hmm. And I think that they told him Delta lost before we knew. And because I believe that the FAA couldn't have taken the hit. My story only became newsworthy because of Steve Dixon going to FAA.
Okay, yeah.
And Captain Sullenberg, bless his heart, was the only one that actually stood up and said, no, this is wrong. You should not be having this guy up here. And mm-hmm. he still made it. And Elaine Chao told somebody was investigating it, take him, because if you don't, we're going to give you somebody worse.
I mean,
these are the things that go on. And then also during my initial report, so this Air 21, FAA investigates and OSHA investigates. And OSHA, Occupational Safety, they have not a clue about aviation.
No,
and typically they always rule in the airline's favor. But FAA investigated and they found a violation of order that Delta was violating duty time regs.
Mm.
And I wrote a FOIA request, Freedom of Information, and had a copy of this. So now, years later, dust settles. Delta's still doing the same thing, putting mm-hmm. pilots on duty for up to 18 hours. But they're paying them a lot of money, so pilots love it. You know, they're getting, mm-hmm. you know, one guy made $800,000, you know, in a year because of this. A couple $100,000 in a month. They're making a lot of money, but they're putting them on illegally. And so they did an investigation, and then they called me, the FAA, and said, hey, you know, or email me, we'd like to have a meeting. So we got on this call, which was very unusual. Somebody reports something. No, by the way, I wrote to the company, you're still doing this. I took it up the chain, told them all, if you guys don't do something about this, I'm going to take this to FAA. Mm-hmm. And so they kept denying that it was, they kept saying it was okay. So that FAA investigation went through, and they came back and they call, you know, so we had this call, which was unusual. Mm-hmm. And he's saying, you know, we really understand what the problem is, but it's a workaround. It's a loophole. Mm-hmm. And I said, how can how can increasing risk, if they're making a loophole, because what they did is they said deadhead is part of duty time, but they were giving, because of COVID, letting pilots who commute to mm-hmm. different things, they were giving them positive space. So now they're saying, well, because we're given positive space over here, as we're deadheading these people, we're just going to call it positive space. We're not going to call it duty time, which it mm-hmm. really is. They're taking people from Detroit, send them to LA, have them sit on the ground for 5 or 6 hours and fly 18 hour, put an 18-hour day after that. Mm-hmm. So it's very long, long days. And so they're explaining this loophole. And I said, I just don't know if I should laugh or cry at this. This is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Okay, investigators, let me ask you one thing. Back in 2000 and I think it was, two, I want to say 15, 2016, the FAA was violated. The FAA violated Delta for this exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And I gave these investigators that FOIA request, my FOIA, the response to it, to show them. I said, just answer me this. Why was it a violation in 2016, but today it's not?
Mm. Yeah.
And this was his response. Well, I'm really angry about this, but that file is missing.
Oh, yeah.
And okay. I laughed and I said, okay, well, why don't you check Steve Dixon's desk and maybe you'll find it. Mm-hmm. So Steve Dixon was the senior vice president of operations at Delta Airlines. At the time they got this violation, this was his baby. He was approving and authorizing and letting this go on.
Yeah.
And they had the violation. Now, years later, he's FAA administrator and all of a sudden this is missing.
Yeah.
And I have to ask how many other violations are missing that I don't know about to even know to look for, but this one's gone. Yeah.
Well, maybe it comes down to one thing. Profitability needs to be, you know, as high as possible. And I know I'm not defending these guys, but, you know, when they're lean years, they try to get more profitable and they're going to do this stuff. No, I'm not defending them, but, you know, businesses want to make profit, right? And at the expense of the employees or whatever. They're going to do what they need to do to make profit.
Well, you're right, but it's at the expense of safety.
Oh, of course, of course. Well,
of course.
Yeah, they don't believe that, though. Carlene, I agree. It's expensive safety. But the safety record of the commercial airline industry in the United States in the past 20, 30 years has been pretty impressive. So they say, well, I'm just guessing. They probably say, well, come on, we're okay. You know, I'm just guessing.
Well, here's the thing.
Am I
somebody
right?
Somebody asked, not really. Yeah. Well, if you look at the stats, somebody has an aviation site. You can go look at the accidents and you can pick your airline, pick the year. I went and looked at Delta. In 2019, they had one accident. 2020, they had two. 20 and 21, they had three. And then they had four. And this year, in the first 6 months, they've had five accidents.
Wow. Okay.
It's going the wrong direction. It's going the wrong direction. Exactly.
Yeah.
And somebody asked yesterday, it was really interesting. They go, well, what would happen if we were, you know, still, since deregulation? What if they hadn't had deregulation? Where would we be at? And Lee, who was my attorney, we were having dinner, and he said, well, here's what, if we didn't deregulate the industry, it would be very expensive,
mm-hmm.
it would be very safe, and only the higher income families could fly.
That's right. That's exactly
right. And he said, and he said, but what's going on right now is all the airlines are competing
for dollars.
Who can do the worst maintenance,
pay
the least maintenance, pay the least to the pilots, work their pilots, but they're all competing to see who can be basically the most unsafe and not have an accident.
Well, exactly, Carlene. In fact, we're almost the same age. I was born in 1958, so I'm 65. But when I was a kid, you know, in high school, I would fly in TWA from time to time as a young guy. And I remember, hey, I'm a rich guy because hardly anybody rich people are on the aircraft. You know, it was pretty obvious to me. Yeah. So things have changed. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, they have. And I'm actually working on a book right now because hopefully we're going to turn it into a movie.
Oh, cool.
But great. I keep saying the numbers of events I put in the safety report, uh-huh. I'm like, going by the grace of God, they weren't catastrophic accidents.
Yeah.
And then I go, should we really be relying, God, on our aviation safety record? Because if you say we're the safest airline, ooh, but we just got really lucky and almost had buried a plane 2,000 feet per minute. I mean, Delta had a flight where a crew left out of Seattle, evening flight, headed to Atlanta. They had a medical emergency, so they diverted and dropped off the passenger. Mm-hmm. And instead of realizing they're starting out fatigued, because when you're at home, first day of the job, you just can't get rested from home. Mm-hmm. And so they're starting out fatigued, flying late. They have an adrenaline rush. They're diverting with this emergency. And they really should have been replaced, but no, we're good to go. And they put them on the airplane and flew into Atlanta. And they, because it's all quiet out there, they give them intercept, hook up the localizer, and they're flying in. And then there's gear too low. And they were both asleep. Mm. And the first officer is the one that woke up hearing it, and he yelled at the captain, landing gear. And the captain still didn't wake up. Oh, so he reaches up and throws the gear down as they're continuing on. And then the noise woke the captain up.
Yeah.
So they were both sound asleep.
Sure.
But that's something that if you just do, it doesn't cost you a lot. You have guys on reserve and out stations. We have bases everywhere. You know, bring a couple pilots and you know that this is ongoing.
Right.
So there's stuff that you can do.
Oh, sure.
It doesn't cost. And like training, there's ways that you could actually get quality training.
Yeah.
Reduce what it costs, but get better training. But
sure.
You don't need more of the same. You just need to redesign what you're doing make it better. So.
Well, you know, I'm going to have to go in a couple of minutes here, but I was going to propose, well, first of all, it's really excellent what you say. So I think, you know, the FAA is doing a reasonably good job. That's my opinion. But I wanted to see what you would say here in the conclusion. And by the way, we can do a part two. I think we could talk more. But what about the FAA? Are you reasonably pleased with their performance or not?
Well, it's such a broad group. I'm going to say no, because Delta's FAA, and I'm just going to say their POI, who's ever approving whatever they're doing down there, Delta's telling them what to do. Because like safety management systems, you are required to train your pilots on safety management systems. But that FAA, or either POI, who's ever authorizing it, says it's okay. Because you have an ASAP report or ASAP reporting system. So that's going to count for your SMS. It has nothing to do with anything. ASAP is aviation safety reports, where we report ourselves for making an error. But a reporting culture under safety culture that mandated for a safety management system is something where an employee says, wait a minute, I see you across the ramp doing this that could be a problem, and we need to fix it. Mm-hmm. And that's what SMS is, where you make everybody destroy all the hierarchies, and it's everybody works together for a common goal.
Yeah.
But not at Delta, because their FAA is not making them do it. And then having that report missing, and there's a lot of good people at the FAA.
Yeah.
A lot of good people.
Oh,
but I'm
sure.
going to tell that, you,
yeah.
the ones who are being controlled by Delta, who's overseeing them?
Yeah. No, it's always
and they're not protected, and they're not protected either, because there's a lot of good people at the FAA who see what's going on, know what's going on, and they can't say anything.
Exactly.
They'll lose their job, and they don't have any protection.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm sorry to end it so soon. I guess, you know, I was calling you at 12:30, but you didn't answer. I'm blaming on you, Carly. But if you want,
well, I looked at 12:39, and I thought he hasn't called yet. So maybe your message.
Well, if you'd like, we can do a part two. I'll email you.
Sure.
But I think it's really, this is the introduction. We can get in deeper into the philosophical issues. You know, I mean, you're going to want to make money, but you got to be safe at the same time. And it's got to be, it's easily achieved, I think. You just got to be scrupulous about it.
I think so, too. Yeah, well, we can let your readers tell us what they want to talk about.
Sure. Absolutely. Very good. Well, look, I will give you, I'll send you an email and we'll schedule part two. And thanks so much. It's exciting. You're going to do a movie. You'll have to tell me all about that next time.
We will do it.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Carly.
Pleasure talking with you.
All right.
Okay,
great.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.